Andres, during this year in Mexico, in addition to the uprising in Oaxaca, there was another sort of upheaval, I guess, and that was the mobilization around the PRD presidential candidate, López Obrador, where thousands and thousands of people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands potentially, occupied parts of Mexico City to demand either another election, presidential election, or to denounce corruption in the presidential vote. And that mobilization of sorts by the Social Democratic PRD. And I'm just wondering if you could comment on how the Oaxaca uprising and this upheaval orchestrated by the PRD coexisted with each other, because it would seem, I mean, I'm being a bit cynical here, I guess, and sarcastic, but one would assume that if people were willing to mobilize on the streets to support a presidential candidate who supposedly is standing up for social justice, when there's a battle for that social justice in Oaxaca, that people might turn to that and support it. But it seems, observing from here, that those two movements were completely distinct, and if anything, there was a complete ignoring of the Oaxaca reality by these PRD politicians. Could you just comment on that dynamic?
Okay. The first is the movement, the resistance movement in defense of the vote. You know, the people had been, and this is a matter of fact, people had been robbed of their vote. You know, there was a massive fraud that took place, and many of us feel that while we don't promulgate with the PRD, we believe that the people's right to defend their vote is legitimate. On the other hand, there are many who believe that in a country and in countries like ours, which have been historically demobilized in many ways, forms of mobilization are positive, respective of whether their strategic goals we might not share them. You know, it's nice to see people resisting in the street, even if not for always the best reason. Now, the popular movement in Oaxaca, there were elements, always elements, that had certain affiliation or sympathy with the PRD. And there were certain elements of the PRD which viewed the popular movement of Oaxaca as something which they could capitalize upon for their own process of resistance. But the dynamics were very different, you know. The dynamics were one of the great weaknesses of the movement in defense of the vote is that it centers upon a certain individual, which is the presidential candidate, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who was robbed of his presidency, to put it a certain way. And today, as many people are looking on that movement, they're coinciding in one critique. Either this movement finds new depth and politically finds new strategic objectives that is creating popular movement for social transformation, or it doesn't have much life left in it. While the movement in Oaxaca was precisely that, creating the depth and watching people mature politically to be able to envision new strategic objectives that had more to do with social transformation and less to do with the deposition of a tyrant. While they're not mutually exclusive, you know, everybody says that we're all in agreement that in order to transform and create popular government, well, you have to take down the tyrant, you know, as it was in the case of the dictatorships in South America. You know, you couldn't possibly create a form of popular government with the dictator on the top. You know, you had to get rid of him in order to create something else. So we understand that, but you see that the two movements, while they coincided at times, while there were sympathies for general and very obvious reasons, you know, the poor people, dark-skinned people, deep marginalized people, disenfranchised people, could be found, you know, these classes of disenfranchised Mexicans, men and women, could be found in the resistance movement for the vote, for Andrés Manuel López Obrador, for the PRD, and they could also be found in the movement in Oaxaca. So that naturally lend itself to creating sympathies and certain alliances. But yes, as you say, they were two different projects. They came up for two different reasons, and they have, I would say, they have two different visions of the future, or of how the country needs to be transformed.
Andres, another political project or political movement is the other campaign, La Otra Campaña, which originates with the Zapatistas in Chiapas, and you are aligned with the other campaign, La Otra Campaña, when you were part of the Awaka commune, the Awaka uprising. And I'm wondering if you could describe the linkages and the political convergence between La Otra Campaña and the Awaka uprising.
The La Otra Campaña, to first clarify one thing, it has, since its conception with the sixth declaration of the Lacandon jungle made by the EZLN in 2005, June of 2005, is a call for a national anti-capitalist movement, a left-wing anti-capitalist movement from the ground up. That's its strategic goal, and that has not changed. Now, as I said before, the popular movement in Oaxaca does not have, an explicit objective, does not situate the capitalist system as its primordial enemy, which is, I don't think it is even something that can be criticized, because that creates a lot of political vision, you know, in societies which have been historically depoliticized. So you can't expect the baby to start running when it first needs to learn how to crawl. But because it was a popular rebellion from the ground up, because it was, as the Zapatistas say, its protagonists were simple and common people, naturally there was an affinity. And that's why in the months following October, November, the alliance between the APO and the EZLN, despite the differences, political differences, became more concrete to the fact that EZLN commanders and representatives of the APO would give press conferences, would give talks, would call for marches, would lead marches in the capital city and whatnot. But the other campaign has a great deal of faith in what happened in Oaxaca, much more so than in necessarily the direction or the structure of the popular assembly. It has a great deal of faith in the people who rose up, and their ability to do it again, and each time to do it better than the time before, while perhaps some of the political contradictions that were internal to the APO, and that will probably continue to persist for some time, were not very amenable to the leadership of the EZLN or to the other campaign in general. The other campaign is its process of political and social and cultural accumulation is a little slower, but it's a little more precise. You know, as it meets with certain people who do identify capitalism as the primordial enemy, and so it has to be a very patient process of building a national movement with these people. The other campaign in December just went through its first process of defining what kind of structure, what principles, and what are the basic characteristics of its movement. It could not do this before, because to do that a priori would be to put the program first and the political subject second, which is, in our perspective, an historical mistake. If you want to build a new movement with the people, they have to be the architects of the political program. So they went through a very intensive process. We went through a very intensive process of consultation to say, well, what kind of structure do we think it should have? How should decision-making take place? What should be the fundamental characteristics? Where should political alliances and convergences be constructed? With whom and with whom not, you know? For example, who will the other campaign never construct a political alliance? For example, political parties and whatnot. All this had to be built from the bottom up. So you see, it's the process, the dynamic, political dynamic might seem to some people even slow, myopic to others. You know, they say, well the nation is rising up, as many people said. Oaxaca, there are pre-revolutionary conditions. We didn't really see pre-revolutionary conditions. We saw a very important social mobilization, but we didn't see that the revolution was around the corner, that a great deal of political content had to be created in Mexico, in that political, that social, the popular landscape, before we could begin to talk about revolution. I don't know if that answers the question or if it just confuses more.
Well, a good answer always confuses a little bit more. So it's both. Andres, as a final question, and you addressed this a little bit at the beginning of the interview, but looking ahead to the upcoming year, what are the challenges facing the commune of Oaxaca, the popular uprising of Oaxaca? As I said, you've already addressed it a bit because the movement is facing intense repression by paramilitaries. But can you look ahead a little bit to the upcoming months and the upcoming year as to the challenges facing this social movement?
I think 2007 will be a year of very intense political mobilization for the whole country. There are at least three processes that are coinciding. One, if we look at the nation on two levels, los de arriba, those who are above, and los de abajo, those who are below. Los de arriba, those above, are suffering what they call a crisis of hegemony. You know, nobody's completely sure who's in charge of the government. The alliances are very tenuous. The capitalist, the bourgeois class, the oligarchy are involved in very intense infighting, or the political class, as they say. So there's a crisis of hegemony and, of course, a crisis of legitimacy, because we know that there's a fraudulent president. Below, what we see, and Oaxaca and the other campaign, and including the movement in defense of the vote of the Social Democratic PRD, are signals that something else is happening, that in the face of this crisis of legitimacy, the people are starting to organize, mobilize, and resist with increasing belligerence. In the middle is an economic system which is sort of the neoliberal model of capitalist accumulation, which in Mexico has become exhausted. It's evident to everybody that it didn't work, that there was a severe economic crisis. Unemployment in this last government of Vicente Fox, which were 6 years, according to state statistics, rose 151% over those 6 years. We see migration increasing. We see unemployment increasing. We see social decomposition increasing. We see violence increasing. We see that, in a Gramscian sense, that the system is losing consensus. And when systems lose consensus, and their hegemony depends upon that social consensus, what I guess Chomsky calls manufacturing consent, it resorts to violence necessarily, you know, and that's why we see so much violence erupting on the part of the state, of the ruling government, you know, because its mechanisms for convincing people that everything is fine, and that if we just hold on a bit more, and if you just continue to be more patient, things will work out, and more of the same will fix the problem, no longer convinces anybody. So what we see are three conditions: a crisis of hegemony above, popular resistance increasing below, greater belligerence, and in the middle, an economic system that is in a profound crisis. And these are three ingredients that, even for orthodox thinkers, you know, Lenin would be rubbing his hands today if he were to see Mexico. So as for Oaxaca specifically, how does Oaxaca fit into this? As I said, the struggles tend to be cyclical, you know, and one first cycle has completed. It's completed its purpose, and many lessons are there. But we know that the movement needs to broaden its political horizon. People need to take the opportunity to construct, build new political imaginaries, you know, construct their own utopias beyond the deposition of a tyrant. For those affiliated to the other campaign, we believe that political horizon has to be the conception of an anti-capitalist or post-capitalist society, with whatever name you want to put to it. But in fact, that all the movements have to converge in the confrontation of the capitalist system, which is the common evil behind all of our problems. So what we think that the times, the months ahead, are months of great deal of grassroots political work, workshops, cultural events in the most popular and combative neighborhoods, in the most popular and combative indigenous and peasant communities. And in fact, there have been a great deal of invitations of people who say, well, tell us about this or tell us about that, or who, in fact, who is Marx, and what is that capital thing about? And so, you know, we've given some workshops on what is capitalism, for example, because people have asked for it, because we can sense as we take the pulse of the society that there is a certain hunger and thirst for increasing their own political vision. Now, we believe that this the Oaxaca needs to live a phase of creating new political content before hitting the streets again and confronting the enemy in such a direct way. You know, others think that the conditions are ripe for guerrilla warfare. And many people, in fact, in the face of the repression, decided to go clandestine and go up into the mountains. I'm not so sure, and we're not so sure that the conditions lend itself for that just yet. You know, that any military component has to be in the service of a political project. You know, and that political project has yet to mature somewhat. For many people in Canada or in industrialized countries, they might see they have a heartfelt reaction to show solidarity with these kind of movements, and of course it's absolutely necessary to create unity against repression, but we must remember that what needs to transform is not Mexico but the world itself. And so if that's the case, and if we all agree, the process of anti-capitalist struggle has to also find root in the industrialized nation, you know, I know this has been said many times, but it's worthwhile to reiterate, is the best form of solidarity. You know, we need to unite struggles. I mean, we need to imagine a world where people in Mexico and in Africa and Asia would have marches and demonstrations in solidarity with popular movements in Canada and the United States, for example. I think once we get to that, we know that the world is about to take a new direction. So I think that there are many lessons from the popular struggle of within the third world societies, which northern societies can assimilate, but they must also create their own platforms, political platforms, struggle, and create their own forms of unity and their own forms of self-governance and self-organization. It must become a very palatable project, very tangible thing, and not just a utopia for poor dark-skinned people.
Andrés Campanero, thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts with us about the uprising in Oaxaca.
Thank you for calling and inviting me.